This hour you will hear from Alan Barkus, who is the world's greatest over 80 basketball player. That's so funny. I just decided to pick Alan's music, not realizing that Chuck Freilich, my guest for this next hour, and I were two of the great teenage basketball players I've ever known.
We were stars. Yeah. Right?
Well, Alan Barkus is a fascinating guy. He's a musician who lives in LaPorte, Indiana. And I met him. He sent me a couple songs. He was the first musical director at the Playboy Club, which sounds like the greatest job in the world. And then he sent me a magazine with his picture on the cover. He was named the greatest over 70 basketball player in the world. He's in a league that plays internationally, and he is still playing. He's got to be.
Aren't you still playing?
Not much. Not much, Chuck. Chuck and I went to high school at the Latin school, and we did play basketball together, and I've always admired Chuck. His father was one of my doctors. You went to Yale after Latin.
That's right.
With the intention of doing what?
Oh, I don't think I had any clear intentions what I was going to do, but I studied philosophy there. And when I was there, I was really interested in film. And I think I was thinking about a film career for a while.
Yeah.
And my roommate was in the film society, so we used to go to films all the time in the evening. And I tried to get into the film society, and the head of the film society was Michael Medved.
Oh,
you remember him?
Oh, yeah, sure. And he wouldn't let you in?
He didn't like me, so.
good. What did you wind up doing after school? I know we've caught up a bit over the years, and we run into each other. I know you eventually wound up at Columbia College, but what happened in between that, Chuck?
Right. Well, after college, I went to Stony Brook, State University of New York, and studied philosophy there. And
in doing that, in furthering your education with a quest toward philosophy, what's your notion of what you're going to do with that?
Well, that was always the problem. Yeah, right. And, you know, I mean, I thought
like your father now. Yeah.
No, I mean, I thought I would come out and teach philosophy, of course, you know, get a job at a university. And we were all in a PhD program at the time, and I only spent 1 year there because, I mean, the job prospects were not so great at the time in the academic world. And it's funny because I just got back in touch with one of the guys who was in my cadre, you know, of PhD students, and he had a really interesting career, and he ended up becoming the pardon attorney for the Department of Justice.
So
I just gave him a call. I hadn't spoken to him in 45 years, and I thought it was so interesting what happened to him. So I gave him a call, and we talked about old times at Stony Brook. And so I asked him the question. I said, if Trump wants to pardon himself, does he have to go through your office?
And does he?
He said, no.
Too bad.
He said, that's different. That's a political pardon.
Too bad. Well, what if
all requests for
pardon
go through.
Is it national pardon? I mean, what about if Trump wants to pardon Rod Blagojevich?
Well, he can go do whatever he wants, but all requests for pardons have to go through this guy's office.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Interesting.
So it's funny what happens to people.
Now that you and I are older, and that's part of what we're going to talk about, because you work for this incredibly admirable prize-winning Mather Lifeways, which is in technical terms, a non-denominational, not-for-profit organization based in Evanston that helps people. Helps people get
old. Age well, right?
Yeah.
We create ways to age well. And, my part of that is really just mainly lifelong learning. So that's what I did at Columbia. I did it at DePaul, at Scheimer College. So, a little bit.
What does that mean, though? What does
lifelong
mean?
Learning?
I know it seems to be its own definition, but what does it mean?
Yeah, it just means continuing to learn, to be interested in ideas, to be interested in society, to be interested in music, you know, I really enjoyed listening to Joni and Spiro.
They're interesting people, aren't they?
They were great.
And they're they're also very, very talented. This is something I have to assume that is, and you may know the big picture in late life care, that it seemed to me that for generations, people retired. They either decided to sit on a couch and watch TV. Maybe they decided to golf. I will never forget that a friend, mutual friend of ours, David Pressman, started enrolling in classes at Northwestern. And every time I would see him, he'd tell me about this new thing he was learning. He's taking a language and he's studying European history or something.
That's right. That's...
Is this a relatively recent phenomenon, or did I just know too many people who devoted their lives to golf?
Well, it could be. I mean, I think, you know, the whole concept of retirement is changing, and we're part of that. There are many organizations involved in kind of redefining what retirement is. You know, we call it repriement ourselves.
I know. And that's not even a word.
No, it's just a made-up word, but, you know, what we're talking about is reprioritizing.
Yeah.
So when you get older, if you're, you know, not committed to taking care of a family or working at a job, you have time to pursue whatever it is you're really interested in. Maybe something that you didn't have time to do before. You know,
something that you gave up.
Something that you gave up. Yeah, exactly. A lot of people give up music, you know, playing an instrument or singing.
You were a musician. Have you?
Right. No, I haven't. I've continued to do that. So
yeah.
I'm still an amateur piano player. And over the years, I've, you know, really gotten more involved in doing things with the piano. You know, I'm still an amateur, but it all started really when Thomas Zells at Pianoforte Chicago started.
Sure.
You know him.
Yeah.
He started an amateur piano competition, and I entered it, you know, just on a lark.
Yeah.
And it led from that to all sorts of contacts with other piano players around Chicago. We have regular groups now that meet at Pianoforte. I got involved in doing some chamber music. Right now I'm working with a woman who used to teach piano, and we're doing some two piano work together. So
that's fantastic.
So it was like one thing led to another, and that's kind of
what you're at Mather trying
right,
to
that's
do.
What we're
making
trying
these
to do.
Connections and making
exactly
because I was thinking to myself that a lot of people, a lot of people when they retire are almost at loose ends. Unless
right.
It's like, let's take a cruise, honey, or I'm going to go play golf tomorrow. This is fascinating. Chuck's
right.
going to be here almost this entire hour, so please stay tuned. We'll talk more about Mather Lifeways and also specifically what he does there, which is booking people into Mather's more than a cafe. Are there three of them?
Right. There are three of them around the city.
And I book programs
for all three of the cafes.
That's great. This is going to be fascinating. It's also really nice to see you because I remember what a good basketball player we both were. We'll take a short break during which I will tell you, first of all, Fly to the Front of the Line at Litfest. Oh, my God, Litfest is coming up on June 9th and 10th with a Fest Pass. Get yours before they're gone at printersrowlitfest.org/festpass. We'll be right back. That's the music of Alan Barkas, the world's greatest septuagenarian basketball player. I'm with my friend Chuck Freilich, who works at Mather Lifeways, which is a complete care. What's a definition?
I'm sure
the definition of that kind of thing changes every year these days.
Right. Well, I mean, we do a number of different things with older adults. So we do operate some residences for senior living. One's in Evanston called the Mather, and there's another one in Wilmette called Mather Place of Wilmette. We have another residence in Tucson, actually, called Splendido. So that's
the one I'd like to live in. That's the one I need a room in.
So we operate the residences. We also do things in the community. So, and one of the things that we do is we operate a number of cafes. There are three cafes in the Chicago area.
And the cafes are also, as I remember, are open to anybody.
Yeah, anybody can come in. Anybody can eat there. The programs are supposed to be for older adults who come to the cafe. But it's basically a neighborhood place, just a friendly place for older adults where they can get good food, but also we offer programs. You know,
How often are there programs? Because you were in charge of dealing with the programming there.
Right, but I'm not the only one who does the programming.
Sure, I don't see how you could.
It's a very big team effort, and there are a lot of people doing programming. I mainly do the lifelong learning programming, but we also have fitness programming, so we have other people who do that. We have musical performances, so we have people. The cafe managers do a lot of the programming themselves.
How often on a weekly basis?
There are programs going on all day. So there are fitness classes, there are art classes, there are lifelong learning classes,
musical performances
in the evening. So, you know, basically the whole day is full of all different kinds of
programs. It seems to me one of the notions is not just to supply that kind of programming for the residents of Mather Lifeways, but also it's a way to tie it and make these places viable parts of the larger community.
Right. I mean, we try to develop programming that'll get people involved in the community doing things. So in other words, the programs aren't passive. They're not just programs that you come to and listen to a lecture or something.
Sure.
But they're supposed to try to get people engaged in doing something. And it doesn't really matter what it is. It can be anything, you know, but to actually do something and not just listen to something. So we try to inspire them to get active in any way. You know, that's what my title is, you know, so lifelong engagement, you know, and repriorment. But
What a weird word.
Yeah, I know.
I get it.
It's just a positive spin. We're just putting a positive spin on retirement. And
how long have you been doing this?
So about 10 years.
How has it changed in the last 10 years?
Well, there was a big change, you know, when the economy changed.
Which was roughly about 10 years ago.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Right, yeah. 2008. So, and that was just about the time I had first come to Mather. So there was a little change then because we were talking about the boomers and what the boomers were going to do, you know, what we are going to do. And so, you know, when the economy changed, people's ideas about what they were going to do changed also. And, you know, people realized, well, maybe I'll be working longer. You know, maybe I won't retire. Maybe I'll work part-time. Maybe I'll volunteer, you know. So people's planning on retirement changed a lot at that time. But the basics of what I do, you know, lifelong learning doesn't really change.
Yeah, it's a big umbrella too. That is a big
right, and it can
umbrella.
Be anything. So you know,
you must have. I mean, you know, at one point, 10 years ago, you were probably teaching people how to use iPhones.
Right. Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, we still do things like that, and we had a big part of our programming was teaching people how to use computers. So we offered computer classes. You know, and we still do that, and we still teach technology, but not so much computers anymore, you know, because people don't use those
right.
as much.
Now
right? People use their phones. So we teach people how
artificial
to
intelligence or something.
Right.
Yeah.
We teach people about virtual reality. You know, we let them sample that, and that's a lot of fun, you know, so because a lot of people haven't tried this before, and they try it, and they realize how much fun it can be.
I've got to think, and I'm saying this because we are of a certain age, but I've got to think, you know, the whole, you know, 70 now seems like the new 40 to me.
Yeah.
And I think the needs as they have been sort of become kind of cliched, like, oh, the retired person needs this. Maybe you need a little stretching exercises. You know, that is such BS at this point, don't you
think?
Right.
Well, I mean,
you know better than I. You're intimately involved.
Right. Well, I mean, that's what we're dealing with, really, kind of the new approach to retirement. And people don't think that way anymore. They don't think of it as just retreating from life, retiring, you know, and not doing anything.
Right.
It's remaining active in some way, remaining engaged, either working, volunteering, working part-time, you know, all of these options that are available.
You must, however, still sometimes encounter the person who does want to just, and it must be a joy for you to see someone drawn into life, but you must still encounter the person who is living a kind of old-fashioned aesthetic where, well, I've turned 65, I've got my pension, now all I want to do is just relax.
Oh, sure. I mean, there are many people like that. But we try to motivate them to change, to transform themselves, you know, in some way. And the way to do that, I mean, partly is just, you know, through one-on-one contact with a person and encouraging them to take that first step, maybe try something new that they, you know, didn't think that they would like, you know, and then following that up with more steps and persevering, and eventually, you know, small changes can take place. So
you've seen that happen.
It
must be very encouraging.
Oh, yeah.
For
I mean,
you.
We have, you know, wonderful stories of people, you know, who have really transformed their lives and have started doing things that they never thought they would do. For example, there was a guy at our cafe at Norwood Park, and he liked to draw and cartoon. And there was another person who wanted to write a children's book. So our cafe manager put them together, and they actually produced their own book, and they got it published, you know, and
wow.
And then they turned out another one after that. So one thing led to, you know, many good things.
Wow, that's a great story.
Yeah,
because the other thing that went in the toilet in around 2000, it was the publishing business. I mean, it's now turned. I mean, it's as crazy as the recording business we were just talking about. I want to play a song, Aubrey. Sir, are we out at 27 or all the way?
27.
Okay, I don't want to play a song right now. I'm going to play one after this. But you found this. You found this. We got 2 minutes before we got to take a break. You found this, I sense, just from looking at you, you find this incredibly rewarding, don't you?
Oh, yeah, it's great. I mean, especially when people make that kind of transformation and really get involved in doing something because of the programming.
Yeah.
And the programming that I do can really be about anything. You know, some of it's about politics. It can be about history. We do a lot of Chicago history, of course. We do film and music. You know, last Friday I was out at our Chatham Cafe. We had Prexy Nesbitt out there. He was a Parker.
Sure.
Went to Francis Parker.
Yeah.
And he was talking about Nelson Mandela and the liberation movements in Africa.
Where's the place in Chatham?
It's on 83rd Street,
okay.
33 East 83rd. It's just east of the Dan Ryan at the 83rd Street.
Near State.
Yeah.
It sounds like Chuck Freilich is the Director of Repriorment and Lifelong Engagement at Mather Lifeways. He's going to be back after the news, and I'm going to play you an Alan Barkus song that is his most popular song. When he first gave me his CD about 10 years ago, I played – here's a good example of – who listens to the lovely people who listen to this show. I played this, his original tune, all of its original, and the title is It Ain't Easy Getting Old. So stay tuned. You will hear that after some commercials and then after the news. Stay tuned. We're talking about old mutual friends of ours. I'm with Chuck Freilich, who's the Director of Repriorment and Lifelong Engagement at Mather Lifeways. I'll tell you, last year, New City, a publication I respect and a publication I'm stunned is still printed. It's gone through it's an ink on paper publication. They also have a website. Every year they published a Best of Chicago issue. And last year, 2017, Best Cafe for Artistic, Open-Minded Seniors and Anyone Else Who Wants to Come, Mather's More Than a Cafe. And I know you're too self-effacing to take this, but it says in a series aimed at active seniors over 50, Chuck Freilich, formerly of Columbia College Fiction Department, books lectures and wide-ranging programs. Topics run from Gwendolyn Brooks, Tuskegee Airmen, Gypsies, Dick Biondi, Eartha Kitt, Carter Woodson, Judy Garland, Evel Knievel, John Dillinger, Leonardo da Vinci, the Cook County Forest Preserves, Kiss of the Spider Woman, to the Chicago Blues.
I don't recognize all those programs, but...
Yeah, I thought you booked them and some didn't show.
Right.
Now, do people come to you, Chuck, and solicit your attention to be booked into places, because there are people who do kinds of tours and stuff.
There's some people, right? There are a number of people who do regular programs for groups like the libraries or, you know, the museums and things like that. So there are people who do programs, and they do sometimes approach us, but most of the programming, you know, we do on our own. And I wanted to emphasize, as I mentioned to
others,
you, that I'm not the only one doing programming.
Well, this new city must have made you angry. Your colleagues must have gone, hey, man, what did you get to?
Yeah, what about us?
Yeah, because, what about us?
Because there are many people who contribute to the programming.
Well, what do you, is it, you trust your gut and something, you'll read a story about someone or you'll read a book review. And you trust your gut, don't you, about what might work and what might not work?
I mean, I'm sure you're the same way, and most people can tell. I mean, when I speak to somebody on the telephone, I can often tell whether they'll be a good presenter or not.
Sure.
Right. So I do that, and you get ideas really in the most random ways. It's funny. One came up the other day. So we were talking about how difficult it is to get an audience sometimes for our programs. You know, we think they're interesting. We try to get programs that we think our audience will like. We try to get suggestions from them.
For your kind of program, what time during the day do you mostly...
Well, most of the lifelong learning programs we do in the early afternoon, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock.
Yeah, sure.
Programs usually last about an hour. We do some programs also in the evening, musical performances we do in the evening. But we were talking about how difficult it is to get an audience. And I always bring up the example of Saul Bellow, who I saw a long time ago, you know, at Crocs and Brentano's on Wabash.
Yeah.
And he was signing books. And there was nobody there.
Nobody there.
So here, you know, you got a Nobel Prize winner for literature, and nobody is there to buy his book. And then I mentioned that another time I was at Crocs, I saw Lana Turner there, and there was a huge line out the door.
Well, of course
to
there
see
was.
Lana Turner.
Well, she was a much better writer than Saul Bellow, for God's sake, Chuck Freilich. Well, I'll never forget. I'll tell my one book story. I had done a book called Dr. Nightlife Chicago, which was a collection of nightclub columns in about 1978, and there was a book signing at Marshall Field and Company on whatever their book floor used to be. They don't have that anymore. I wind up sitting between Jim Davis, the cartoonist and author of the Garfield, the cat books, and Stephen King.
Whoa.
There are two endless lines going out. People would get bored, walk up to my empty line table, look at my book, and then go find their place in one of those lines. The nicest thing about it was Stephen King and Jim Garfield both bought a copy of Dr.
Knight. All right.
In Stephen King's library, is that. But and how do you occasionally have probably made a mistake, and your instincts were right, and you booked somebody who was just, you don't have to mention names, but who was just terrible, who couldn't speak in public.
Oh, you mean somebody who actually wasn't very good. Well, I'll tell you, just in general, I'll mention this, because you know I come from academia.
I do.
I mean, Columbia College, you know, which is a different kind of a place, or was, at least when I was there.
It changed a lot over the last...
Right, it's changed a lot. But anyway, I have had a lot of problems with academics because they don't often know how to speak to a general audience.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're full of technical jargon or, you know, and they're boring
yeah.
sometimes. And so So I usually try to warn people from academia in advance, you know, remember this is a general audience you're speaking to, you know, try to keep the jargon to a minimum. So maybe that, you know, that's one kind of general problem. But generally, I'd say we've had good luck with our speakers and we've had some, you know, really good people. And
what's one or two that really, and not, if not, surprised you, because you do you know, solid research behind these, but
right.
But was there any a couple that just blew you away?
Well, there were a lot, actually. I mean, I can mention a whole bunch,
sure,
of them, but I mean, one that you would know about probably is Jim Jacobs, the author of Grease.
Oh God, yeah, sure.
So Jim came out to the cafe and he was just fabulous.
Now, how did you get Jim, who is,
well, that was a search,
a, you know, it's an a interesting lot of times, get
a lot of times I do have to, you know, do some a little detective work,
sure,
and it was hard to find him. And I don't remember exactly the path, but I think I went first maybe to Bill Williams at Columbia. And I spoke to him, and I think he suggested maybe getting in touch with Gary Houston.
Oh,
is
my
that
God,
possible?
These are all my old,
right?
Friends. Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Yeah, I thought so. So, and you remember Polly Penn, of course.
Oh, very well.
Greece.
Very well.
So, I mean, I had some connections I was working on, and eventually I found him. I found an email address for him.
Sent
him.
He's in California. One.
And he was more than happy to come back, actually, because... you know, because he comes here a lot for the Cubs games,
You
know, he's in Chicago. And so he said, well, maybe sometime when I'm in Chicago, we'll book a date. And he knew the cafe anyway, because he knew what it was before it was a cafe. He remembered it, the restaurant that was there.
Oh, how great.
The Skylark or something,
you know,
like that.
Jim, yeah. The great thing about Jim, he doesn't have to get out of bed to make like $1 million a year.
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, what a gold mine Greece has
that
been
started
for him.
in a storefront,
right,
you know,
yeah, we
real
there,
storefront.
Right.
Yeah, we were there.
We saw the beginnings of it. But
Polly Penn, it was the, you know, 16-year-old Latin school student when she was in that show.
Right.
Yeah, that's the greatest theatrical triumph in the history of Chicago.
The great thing about Jim and the reason he was such a great guest is because he was so enthusiastic about it, and you could tell that the money wasn't really what was driving him. You know, he really loved the music. That's why he wrote this, you know, this musical. And so that enthusiasm kind of just came out. Also, he was just very funny and a good speaker and just very down to earth and natural.
Yeah, you should mention that he collaborated on that play with the late Warren Casey. And they were quite a pair. That was like, they just struck gold.
Yeah, I know.
And the show changed radically. It was
it was
a little rawer on Lincoln Avenue.
You know, he revived it, and he tried to do recently.
Yeah,
he tried to do the show the way it was originally.
Right, the 40th anniversary is pushing 50 years. I mean, it really is pushing years. That's great. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, he mentioned, the other thing is, you know, we try to make it a kind of memorable experience by adding things to the program. So, of course, you know, we added food from the 50s, you know, regular Coke and old Coke bottles. And we had the cafe decorated 50s style, you know. So we try to make it a real experience and not just, you know, talking.
What size crowds do you get?
Well, the cafes are small. So
I remember that.
Now, when you came, we had a nice crowd for you. I don't remember.
I don't either.
It was one of the biggest, of course.
The biggest ever. It was the biggest
I'll tell you,
history,
the biggest ever, actually. But, you know, media people actually draw the most.
Oh,
but
yeah.
People like Roy Leonard. Roy was great and came out, you know, shortly before he passed.
Yeah.
And another guy who's been there several times is John Drummond.
Oh, Bulldog.
Yeah, Bulldog.
Good old Bulldog.
He's been there, you know, at our cafe in Norwood Park, I think, about four times. And
that's
people
great.
Still love him, you know, because he's a great guy.
Well, we'll see what happens if you could ever get Tom Skilling to come to one of these things. We got to take a short break.
Somebody has mentioned that to me.
Oh, he'd have to rent the auditorium theater. we'll be back after a short commercial break and finish off with Chuck Freiley. You've been great. I mean, this is fascinating to me on many levels. And you will hear Alan Barkus's most famous song. We'll be right back. talking about getting older and the pensions and retirement and all that stuff, because Chuck deals with a lot of people who are in that not unpleasant position as the director of Repriorment and Lifelong Engagement at Mather Lifeways. If you've been listening to him talk, you should go to Mather Lifeways, MatherLifeways, not just to, I'm not saying you're in ready to move in, but the cafes, the more than a cafe that Chuck is involved in, are wonderful places. I mean, they have great food, and they have tons of programming, much of it with very interesting people like Rick Kogan, Chuck Osgood, Roy Leonard, but also covering a variety of different disciplines and different areas, some of it entertainment, some of it a little more rarefied than that. And after each one of these, do people know that you're the person programming? So when you're there, do they come up to you and go, "That was that guy was stupid. He's an idiot. I don't ever have him back here."
Oh yeah, definitely. I always get you always get good feedback from the audience. Yeah, and they do talk to me, but they know that the cafe managers and other people are also doing the programming, so they speak to them as well. And usually the receptionists at the cafe get most of the feedback, and so they can tell, whether somebody did a good job.
That's
or
right.
not.
Chuck, it seems, I'm so happy for you, because it seems like this is something that is really rewarding for you.
Well, it's fun. I mean, it is fun making all of these connections and learning about other people. I should say also we have other, programs that we do. We do programs over the phone. And we've had a lot of fun with some of those programs.
Like
so
what?
That's just like we've had a few celebrity guests on there, including some great people like Rosemarie.
Oh, my God.
We had her on. We had her interviewed shortly before she passed.
Yeah.
It was probably one of the last interviews she did. And we do all kinds of regular programs on the telephone, like television, we do programs about television, programs about opera, programs about art history. And so to interview Rosemarie, I had our regular television guy, Wally Podrasik, who
teaches
Wally
well.
At UIC.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So I asked Wally to interview her, and he did a great job with her. And the first celebrity guest we had on there was Tippi Hedren. I asked Roy Leonard to interview her. Roy had a lot of fun with that, I think, because
he hadn't been doing
that in a long time. So he really enjoyed that.
It sounds great. You're having fun. I want you to stay here while I play this Alan Barkus song. This is Alan Barkus, now the greatest. He cannot be an octogenarian yet, but the greatest septuagenarian basketball player in the world. So in honor of the great skill that Chuck Freilich and I used to have on the basketball court, along with Mike McCarthy and Tom Brown and the other legends of the Independent League, here is Alan Barkus's It Ain't Easy Getting Old.
Getting old, that's what the wise men say. Might as well wind it up. Looks like your time is up, and who knows if you'll even make it through today. It ain't easy getting old. Soon you're slow fade away. One time when you were hot, you said, "What happens when you're not?" And now you got to answer every single day. You got early evening nightlife. You got chemically aided sex. You think you'll hit the bottom, then the legs go next. Ain't dead, but it's got the same effect. It ain't easy getting old. Mm-hmm. dice with fate, and she's never lost a bit. You think about the money that you're never gonna get, and all of them fine young women, well, they haven't shown up yet. It ain't easy getting, in fact, it's damned upsetting. It ain't easy getting old.
That, the great Alan Barkus. If you were listening to Chuck Frolick, it is kind of easy getting old because there are places like Mather Lifeways that do all this programming and turn people on to new interests. Retired life is, as we've sort of think of it, and we think of it mostly as in a cliched kind of way, it ain't that way anymore. I mean, we're talking about George Freeman. He's 91 years old. He's playing gigs all over town. So Don't think of it that way. Go to matherlifeways.com. And Chuck, it's great to see you.
It was great.
Chuck was a great basketball player. I was okay, but I was younger, so I didn't mature. I didn't mature till later. One day we'll have him come on here. We'll have a Latin school reunion on here. Talk about all the great things we've done.